It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everybody. You know, if the Republicans really wanted to hurt Obamacare this month, maybe they should have just shut up instead of shutting the government down. If you Google the term Obamacare rollout this morning, you'll get headlines like Daily Beast, the abysmal, pathetic Obamacare rollout. Ezra Klein, Obamacare rollout is a complete disaster, MSNBC. Mediaite, Robert Gibbs calls for firings over excruciatingly embarrassing Obamacare rollout. And then predictably, Sebelius won't quit cabinet over Obamacare rollout. The Hill, oh my. Republicans must be kicking themselves for distracting attention from stories like that. Democrats obviously are kicking each other over how bad the software seems to be. Here is Gibbs, President Obama's former press secretary on MSNBC, on Monday.
I hope they're working day and night to get this done. And when they get it fixed, I hope they fire some people that were in charge of making sure that this thing was supposed to work.
And he went on.
This is excruciatingly embarrassing for the White House and for the Department of Health and Human Services. This was bungled badly. This is not a server problem, right? Like just too many people came to the website. This is a website architecture problem. I think it is, again, it's excruciatingly embarrassing.
Robert Gibbs on MSNBC. He'll be a guest on the show next Wednesday, by the way. But let's talk now to another of the pro-health reform commentators I cited in those critical headlines, Ezra Klein, Washington Post Wonk Blog columnist, and another guest who lives at the intersection of technology and progressive politics, Andrew Roche, founder of Personal Democracy Media, the Sunlight Foundation, Personal Democracy Forum, and other groups that work to make government more transparent online. He's also the chairman of Tech Meetup in New York City. Ezra, Andrew, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you for having me.
Ezra, all the conservative websites are gleefully reposting your comments on Morning Joe that the way this IP is going is a disaster and you really don't think people should soft pedal what a bad launch this is. How bad a launch is it?
It's a disaster. I don't think people should soft pedal it. Yes, it's been funny to watch those comments ricochet. Ted Cruz yesterday said that I called for a one-year delay of Obamacare, which I haven't done. It's been fascinating to watch that game.
Oh, Ted Cruz was quoting you, huh?
Ted Cruz was quoting me. But look, I mean, this is we in Washington and folks who are highly engaged in politics more generally can kind of get caught up in this idea of Obamacare as this political abstraction, right, as this sort of the flag in this game of capture the flag between the left and the right. That's not what it is. It is an expansive law that, if it works, is going to be a transformation of the American healthcare system and bring insurance and improve the lives of tens of millions of people. So the core responsibility the Obama administration had with Obamacare is to roll it out correctly, is to do a competent job running the government beyond all the messaging and communications and politicking. That is their core job, right? That is what most of the people in the federal government do. They run the federal government. Right now, this launch is a catastrophe. And I don't think there's really another way to put it. We're, I think, about 3 weeks in now. At the moment, we're starting to see people get through to the website, which, by the way, the fact you're only beginning to see that 3 weeks in is not great. But that is an improvement. So it looks like some of the server load problems are beginning to abate. The big thing that I'm worried about is there's a lot of talk, and I've gotten it in my reporting, and other reporters have found it as well, that the website is transmitting the wrong data. It's transmitting garbled data to insurers. And that's really dangerous, right? Because in a world where you just can't get in, well, okay, you just don't get in. You just don't buy it. You go do something else. You go look at YouTube on the internet. In a world where you get in and you do your waiting and you wait through the wait screens and you give them all your information and you look around and you eventually pick a plan and you buy the plan, and then the insurer gets the wrong information about you or about which plan you're in, and then in 6 months you try to go to the doctor and you can't. That's a catastrophe for real people, right? That's not an abstraction. And we don't know how widespread these problems are, but we're all hearing about them. And so I think there's this real question, and again, it's one that we don't quite know how to answer, is how much of this is really going wrong and how much of it is fixable and on what time frame?
and on some of those details that you were starting to mention that go beyond the cumbersome website experience. The Wall Street Journal has an article up now, headline, Health Website Woes Widen as Insurers Get Wrong Data. And it says emerging errors include duplicate enrollments, spouses reported as children, missing data fields, and suspect eligibility determinations, say executives at more than a dozen health plans. So, Andrew, I mean, you can forgive some early bugs in a big software or operating system rollout. I noticed Microsoft just rushed out Windows 8.1 because Windows 8 was such a hash. Is Obamacare at another level of dysfunction?
Yeah, there is a huge level of dysfunction, but mostly because of the culture. I mean, our government is still basically operating on a 20th century model. And the procurement rules and the way in which government thinks about technology, unfortunately, isn't able to keep up with the realities of today. So on these issues of these data problems, I mean, if you're going to roll out a big website, you need time to be able to fix the bugs and to be able to do quality assurance and be able to check to see. And so, you know, when someone's clicking two boxes when they're only supposed to click one, it should kick the application back so that a person gets it right before it gets sent in. So we're just seeing sort of this snowballing effect of this cultural problem where the contractors and the government officials are dealing with a system that was not able to be able to deliver this kind of broad, comprehensive, new website, interactive website that allowed people to participate on a timeline that the president wanted. And frankly, nobody actually told the president the truth, that this wasn't possible. And as a result, since nobody wanted to be the bearer of bad truth, it just kept snowballing and snowballing and snowballing, and now we're seeing the results.
Not just not good, not possible?
Not possible in a time frame that was put on by the White House to get this done by October. There were lots of people inside the administration who were warning the White House that this was not on a timeline that was capable. And on top of that, the systems of the government are not ready to actually work on this kind of project in the time frame that was required.
Listeners, your experiences so far with Obamacare, as Ezra Klein is saying, this is not an abstraction. This is about you and your real lives if you're going shopping for insurance on these exchanges. We've taken calls like this before already a number of times since October 1st, but we could do it again. Also, your comments, questions, proposed fixes for what ails Obamacare so far, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Andrew, you told us off the air that the president inherited much of the infrastructure and tech contractors from prior administrations. But how much of an excuse can that be 5 years into what was supposed to be a tech-savvy team Obama, 3 years after the law was passed to get this specific rollout
done?
Yeah,
so this is actually the big problem and sort of misnomer. So, yes, Obama used technology really great in a great way during the election, and he's in the White House communications is actually pretty savvy around technology. But the fact that they're able to do that doesn't mean that you're able to translate that through the entire federal system. And in fact, whenever we elect a president, particularly from another party, we actually go backwards 8 years because you end up bringing people into the government who were part of your party the last time you were in power. So in a lot of ways, we got a Clinton White House with Obama, and a lot of those people think in 20th century terms about government. So to try to convert the government into a 21st century model that's easy to do on a campaign or easy to do from a White House communications perspective is not quite so easy to do across the entire government.
We heard Robert Gibbs call for people to be fired over this without naming any names. Here is Senator Pat Roberts from Kansas calling for his old colleague from Kansas, who he used to support, Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, to resign.
Today, I am calling on Kathleen Sebelius to resign her post as Secretary of Health and Human Services. Secretary Sebelius has had 3.5 years to launch Obamacare, and she has failed.
Senator Pat Roberts, and here is Sebelius this week reacting to the resignation pressure and to the rollout problems.
Now, I'll be the first to tell you that the website launch was rockier than we would have liked. Lots and lots and lots of interest and difficulty getting people on the site and getting them to the plans.
Kathleen Sebelius, Secretary of Health and Human Services. Ezra Klein, obviously it's not news that someone like Pat Roberts, a Republican facing a Tea Party primary next year, no less, would pounce on Sebelius and make a show of it. But that being said, is Sebelius just way too sanguine there in that clip?
It drives me crazy when I hear members. It sends my blood pressure skyrocketing when I hear members of the Obama administration say, it's been rockier than we would have liked. I heard somebody else say, you know, certainly we can agree that it has not been as smooth an experience as we hoped. I mean, it's gone too far to call this Orwellian, but this kind of, you know, corporate disaster speak, it's been really bad. It's been a disaster. Now, one thing that you said a moment ago that I just want to actually make clear for listeners.
Yeah.
These are the Obamacare federal exchanges. They exist in the 34 states that decided not to build their own online insurance marketplaces. New York, for instance, built its own, and New York's is working quite well. California built its own. Washington built its own. Oregon built its own. Kentucky built its own. And in those states, and by the way, I think this proves, because these states are not all running amazing 21st century tech architectures, in these states, they've actually worked. They're not perfect, and they do have what we could reasonably define as glitches, right? There is a day in many of them where it didn't work that well. There are problems. There are errors. But most of the time, it works. It's a functioning website. You can use it. The insurers get the right information. And in these states, you've got hundreds of thousands of people signing up, and also signing up, by the way, for Medicaid. So it's actually important to say that the performance of the federal government, which has vast resources compared to a Kentucky or even to a New York, is really what's at issue here. And so you do have this kind of interesting chasm between these blue states or states run by Democratic governors that decided to build their own exchanges, that decided to expand the Medicaid program. And in these states, even right now as we speak, Obamacare is working pretty well.
Right.
Then
so,
you have these other states where they didn't, where they decided to leave the exchange up to the Obama administration and also to typically reject the Medicaid expansion. And in those, this law is absolutely floundering. And so, yeah, I mean, this is on Sebelius to a great degree, right? She was in charge of the federal rollout here, and it is particularly the federal role that has been a failure.
Is this somewhat then, however, the fault or even the plan of Republican governors, including Chris Christie in New Jersey, who did accept the Medicaid expansion but not the did not build a state website? This wasn't supposed to be a big national website, as you point out, mm-hmm. where you sign up for insurance. It was supposed to be 50 state websites, but you have 34 Republican governors refusing to participate. So I suspect millions more people using healthcare.gov than the original idea was supposed to include. Could that have anything to do with it?
That's absolutely true, right? So they expected, CMS expected, the Obama administration expected, that maybe they would be called on to build the website for one or two or three or four states that couldn't get their act together. They thought every state would want to do this on their own. That was what the states told them going into this. But, you know, Brian, that said, they knew very early on. I mean, they've known for years the states aren't going to build the websites. And I've talked to them throughout this entire process, and nobody ever sat down with me and said, you know, this is literally going to be impossible. And if that was the case, then they should have told somebody that, right? And by the way, I think Andrew gets this right. There was a huge management failure going up to the White House where they didn't know. Where, by the way, people like me were hearing from inside CMS, something is going wrong here. This is not going well. And we go to the Obama administration, the people supposedly in charge, and say, I'm hearing terrible things from inside your testing process. And they'd say, absolutely not. We're on top of it. We're fixing the bugs. It's going to be great. October 1st, we're going to be ready to go. And I don't think they were lying. I think they were not being told. I think that the management broke down in a way where the middle managers didn't want to tell the top managers, or the top managers didn't want to tell the Obama administration how much is going wrong. And that is also, by the way, on the Obama administration. Getting the management right is on them as well. But yeah, so while I do think that there is a blame, significant blame that can be put on Republicans for making the launch of Obamacare so much more difficult, at the same time, it is just not a plausible argument that it would have been impossible for the Obama administration to launch a working website here.
Andrew Rochette.
And so that's on them.
So let's first of all, we should separate the fact that the websites don't work the way they should away from the issue of whether Obamacare is good for the country or not. So, because it's a technical issue that's not being resolved. And the fact that the administration has had to do a workaround, the Republican governors who have not built websites, certainly complicated the problem. But traffic can be solved. Traffic is handled by servers and there's ways in which traffic can be solved. It's not that there's so many people that's the reason why. The whole structure, the architecture of this failed from the get-go because the contractors and the culture in Washington around building this was not prepared. The management structure, as Ezra just pointed out, wasn't prepared. And the president actually was not properly informed to make the decision to be able to tell American people the truth about how hard it would be to go to work around Republican governors who were not going to deliver health care to their citizens.
Andrew Rochette from the New York Tech Meetup and Personal Democracy Media. Ezra Klein from The Washington Post. Let's go to our phones. Karen in Bayhead, New Jersey. You're on WNYC. Hello, Karen.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a couple of incidents. I went to sign up on the website, and I had quite a few glitches. I tried again and again, and I finally gave up, and I went to the phones. I had a very positive experience with a young woman from Alabama on the phone, and she signed me up over the phone. Granted, it took about 40 minutes, but she went through every question, and I'm waiting for the actual papers to come in the mail, which I'm confident will come. So then I'll take the next step. But the other interesting thing is, from what I've been hearing from you, really rings a bell, because over the summer I took a very extensive overview of how to design a website. And there's so many people in this country that think that because we possess this technology that you can just kind of go onto a computer and say, here, this is how we start. Let's make a website. And they don't understand how much is actually involved in the architecture of a very simple website, let alone one that's going to serve the entire country. So granted, there were probably people afraid to say things that it was going to take way longer than it is, because people just don't get it. And so I think that there should have been a more realistic time frame. And I also think that because there is such a need for affordable care, people should be a little bit more patient.
Karen, thank you. Good points in both directions. Ezra, I saw someone on MSNBC compare healthcare.gov to Amazon. The comparison was that with Amazon, you put items that you might buy in your cart, and only when you're ready to buy do you enter your personal information, like your address and credit card number. On healthcare.gov, you have to enter tons of personal data before you even get to start comparing insurance policies. Is that an apt comparison? Is it a fair comparison?
There are parts of it that are fair. So the actual issue being identified there is definitely fair. They made a decision that you would have to log in at the front end in order to see the plans. You wouldn't be able to window shop, in other words. This was a mistake. It was clearly a huge mistake, and we don't know exactly why they did it. I've heard varying things. The thing that's persuasive to me is what they wanted people to be able to see was the price they would actually pay, right? So on Amazon, when you browse around, the price you see there for that television is the price you will actually pay. But on healthcare.gov, when you browse around, the price you'll pay is dependent on your income, right? Because there are so many subsidies embedded in the program. So they want to get that income. They want to understand who you are. So they can say, you know what, this insurance product won't be $120 a month for you. It'll be $18 or $46 or $72, because they want you to get a real sense of it. So on the one hand, it made perfect sense what they wanted to do there. On the other, it doesn't make sense if you can't actually do it. Now, the way the Amazon comparison is inapt, and this goes, I think, a little bit to Andrew's point, is that healthcare.gov was not like you or me or the Washington Post or some other self-contained institution or individual creating a website. It's a website that is having to integrate and interface with a bunch of different parts of the federal government, so with the computer systems of CMS, of HHS, of the IRS, of the Social Security Administration. It's integrating with insurance systems on the back end, with state Medicaid systems, with state insurance systems. So it wasn't self-contained where they could just build the thing they wanted to build from scratch. That's what they did on the campaign, and they were quite capable when they did that. It was one of these things where you were jury-rigging a ton of different creaky systems together, and that does appear to be where a lot of the damage has come in. That's part of why the decision, say, to have people log in first created a load that these systems simply couldn't handle, because there were so many different places for it to break down.
And, Andrew, one big thing that's different from Amazon is that on Amazon, like any store, you pay the price the item costs. On healthcare.gov, you have to calculate your subsidy to get your price, so you have to enter your information. But I guess they still could give you the option of seeing the various policies first.
Well, sure, but if you have to rely on a whole bunch of suppliers, and if the suppliers had different systems and different databases and different ways of reporting, it's not that easy to sort all that out. I mean, Amazon's been around now. At the beginning of Amazon, it didn't quite have as robust a choice as it has. It didn't have, you know, a marketplace of other sellers. It didn't have different ways of shipping. It takes time to build this stuff out, which goes to the central point, which is that this is a complicated process, and the White House, on a timeline to get this delivered was not realistic, or was not being given realistic information to be able to make a decision about the proper way to build this kind of service.
We're talking about the problems with the Obamacare rollout with Ezra Klein, columnist at The Washington Post, contributor to MSNBC and Bloomberg as well, Andrew Roche, founder of Personal Democracy Media and chairman of the New York Tech Meetup, and Fred in Manhattan here on WNYC. Hi, Fred. You work in healthcare IT?
Yes.
And?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. What do you want to say?
Yeah, in fact, a lot of the good points have been covered, but I totally agree. Somebody who's done this for a living and built a lot of these kinds of systems, not as sophisticated, not as complex, sophisticated it was. There's just too many moving parts. I don't believe that it will ultimately work, in my view, unless they really substantially change so many of the variables they're dealing with. We had a similar situation where we started qualification and eligibility up front. It was impossible to make it. We had to do 180-degree turn in order to make a system work. And it just they've taken on too big of a project. And I think for everybody's sake, they have to absolutely reduce it to a reducible minimum for this thing to work perfectly. Going to check all, as one of your gentlemen said, going to check to all these different databases of government. You know how hard it is to do one of them. I mean, it's just impossible to bring all these variables under control in a timely basis.
Fred, thank you for your call. So, Andrew, can this be decentralized, which I guess is what Fred is suggesting? If they have to take insurance policy shopping from people in 34 states, how can they fix it?
Well, I think what Fred's really saying is that less is more, and that you start with a baseline, simple delivery of some basic information. And maybe they could have started earlier asking people just to sign up and give some basic information, collect that data before they started adding on. But they basically threw everything into the kitchen sink at once, turned on the dishwasher and everything else, the garbage disposal all at the same time, and are trying to figure out how to make it all work. It's really, really hard because there's just so many moving parts.
What do you think they are doing right now to adjust to these problems, and what do you think they should be doing?
I think that they're scrambling as fast as they can to try to fix the glitches and to try to get as many people through the system so they can start telling a story. And I think they're also trying to spin a very positive story publicly, to try to swing attention away from this embarrassing situation.
Against the backdrop of you guys going on and say, don't believe it, it's a catastrophe.
But the central point here, Brian, is that we should take a lesson from this, not just because healthcare is so important, but it's time for our country to come to the realization that we live in the 21st century, and our government and our politics have to match. We're seeing transformations in every other industry across the board, whether it's media or transportation, et cetera, with living in a hyper-connected world, and our government just hasn't caught up. And it's not enough anymore that members of Congress, only a handful of them, know how the internet works. It's not enough that politicians don't know the difference between a server and a waiter. We need to figure out how to get our government to be a 21st century government. And this isn't just at the federal level, it's at the local level as well.
Peter in Red Bank, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for having me on. I discovered after trying to get onto the healthcare.gov website for about 3 weeks that there is a workaround, which in New Jersey you can go to the individual websites for the healthcare insurers. I went to Horizon and AmeriHealth, and I was absolutely startled at seeing what the unsubsidized price was. I currently am paying about $1,500 a month for coverage for me and my family. The unsubsidized price is going to be about $2,000 a month. Now, I imagine that there are quite a few people in New Jersey who will not qualify for the subsidy, and that's a whopping 33% increase in my monthly premium. That's a huge burden.
Ezra, does this ring true to you?
So this is an interesting secondary issue of premiums. So definitely some plans are seeing an increase and some plans are seeing a decrease. And it's very hard for me to speak on anybody's individual situation without sort of knowing what their plan is, knowing what their family situation is, and also knowing what their subsidy situation would be. The way to think about this is that three things are happening to premiums right now, and they all matter. One is that we're increasing the accessibility of these plans. So in the plan this gentleman was in before, in an individual market plan that he buys on his own, one reason the costs were down is that if a family that was actually sick tried to sign up, they just got rejected. Or if the family with health problems in the past tried to sign up, they had their price skyrocketed. So but largely they couldn't come in. And often in these plans, 25, 30%, 40% of the people who signed up would not actually pay the sticker price. Either wouldn't be allowed to buy it at all, or they'd be paying more. So now we're not allowing plans to do that, and that's raising prices for folks who are healthy because you're allowing the sick in. So that's number one. Number two that's happening is we have increased the benefit levels of some of these plans, not by a huge amount if you were dealing with reasonable insurance before, but a lot of these plans didn't have any coverage of, say, maternity benefits or mental health. A lot of them had deductibles in the $10,000 or $15,000 range. That kind of stuff has been tamped down on. It's a smaller effect, but that also raises the cost. What is happening on the other side of that to bring down prices are two things. One is competition, right? So this gentleman went to the sort of the insurer's website and saw one plan. The Obama administration's hope is the way this will work is people go to the exchange website, the healthcare.gov website, see all of these plans that are in competition with each other, and pick the ones that are delivering a better value for money. And if that isn't this one, then this one will have to face a pressure to actually bring its cost down, which is something too often insurers don't really do now. And then the second thing, of course, is that there are about $1 trillion of subsidies in these markets right now to help people buy insurance if they can't afford it. So there are some things that are increasing the cost of plans, some things that are bringing them down. And what is basically happening is you have some people who are healthier and younger who, and if they're richer, so they're not going to qualify for subsidies, they would be paying, they're likely to be paying a bit more. And then a lot of people who are a little bit older, a little bit sicker, maybe not as wealthy, who are going to be paying a lot less. But it's not that every single person is a winner here. We shouldn't pretend there aren't trade-offs being made in the market. It's just that the people who were getting discriminated against before are now in better shape, and that's having effects on the other end.
And I don't want to lose sight of the fact, and Peter, thank you for your call and relaying that experience. I don't want to lose sight of the fact that people are buying insurance on these exchanges. In fact, from what I've read, Ezra, it's more than the number of purchasers that they anticipated by 18 days in.
So that's not accurate, no.
Not accurate?
No, I mean, it's hard to say what they'll get to, but on the state exchanges, you are seeing a very large number of buyers. That's completely true. On the federal exchanges, you're seeing many, many, many fewer than they wanted. We think that their goal for the first month was 500,000. That's what we've been told so far. They are very unlikely to meet that, and if they do, it'll be almost 100% coming from the states. The federal exchanges, and I've tried to be as upfront with you guys and your readership as I can, be honest.
Absolutely.
They're simply not working. Now, some people are getting through, but it's not tens of thousands, much less hundreds of thousands mm-hmm. a day.
So,
and that's what you would need to get to those kinds of numbers.
So, Andrew, is it possible that the demand the Republicans shut down the government over is actually a good idea, politics aside, just delay the individual mandate for a year because the system isn't ready like they delayed the employer mandate for a year?
Yeah, but I think that from a practical perspective, yes, but that's sort of, that's not their intent. Their intent is a political one as opposed to a practical one.
Clearly, but if we can pick those two apart, does it just make sense for the good of all those involved for the Obama administration to say, okay, we get it. This stinks right now. We're going to put it on hold until next year.
There's no way. Go ahead, Ezra.
I really think people miss something in this part of the conversation. They're probably going to have to extend open enrollment. Delaying the individual mandate for a year would be a disaster. What's important to see here is that all of the insurers have priced their product on the assumption of an individual mandate, right? They price their product on the assumption that people would be forced into the market and would buy it, and that is part of how they're going to get the number of younger, healthier people required to keep premiums down.
Right.
If you undo the individual mandate, they have to reprice their product up. It's just the way that the economics of it will work. So you won't just have said people don't have to buy it. You'll have said it's going to have to get a lot more expensive. It would be – that is very much unlike the employer mandate, which is just, I think, a completely off analogy that Republicans like to use, but is inaccurate. The individual mandate plays a central role in keeping premiums down in the main markets.
It's
and
a great
if you took
price.
It out,
it's a great
it
point.
Wouldn't just be, it's not just like alleviating pressure. It's actually unwinding the whole thing.
It's a great point. But when you talk about open enrollment, it now is until December 15th, if you want your policy to kick in on the first possible date, which is January 1st, you're saying extend that date.
So it's currently you can enroll without having an individual mandate penalty right now, I believe, until March. They could just push that further out into the year. That would be totally fine, and that's what a lot of people expect them to do. So in terms of the individual mandate, right, which is different than in terms of getting your insurance to begin on January 1st,
mm-hmm.
The way to deal with the individual mandate issue is probably to extend open enrollment. Now, if they don't have this website and this system working by March, they are in a level of trouble that none of us are currently anticipating.
Ezra Klein, columnist at The Washington Post. He writes the Wonk Blog column, contributor to MSNBC. and Bloomberg, Andrew Roche, founder of Personal Democracy Media, and chairman of the New York Tech Meetup. Thank you both very much for coming on and having this conversation, being so candid. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And listeners, keep posting your comments and experiences to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Still to come on the Brian Lehrer Show today, who wants to run New York's most fiscally stressed out county? We'll find out. James Dell from Gawker and Bob Garfield from On the Media debate the threat from so-called native advertising on your favorite websites. Another call in from the ones you suggested this week. This time, where would you move and why? Has Long Island learned anything from the murder of an immigrant in Patchogue 5 years ago? And a multilingual call-in experience pegged to the Foreign Languages Hopscotch event in the city this weekend. We'll explain. Stay with us.